the University Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, showing off pictures of his son, it's Professor Jason Roach.
I'll hold these up to the microphone so everybody in Radioland can see them.
At the Clausen fire station.
Yes, very, standing very on cool. One of the fire trucks.
Always fun to see a big old fire truck. To your left, of course, is Professor Stephanie Conant.
Of course.
Who else?
She's always on Jason's the left. How's it going, Stephanie?
It's going. Good.
I'm going to follow up with you on this crazy idea I have to paint a periodic table in
did
your
you
big
get my
lecture
response?
Hall. I thought it was a great response. Yes, with the Game of Thrones stuff.
Game of Thrones themed T cells.
Yes. Very cool. Yeah. I just saw that big wall yesterday. Now that Prasad's gone, I can talk about the union meeting. After a while, everything just started sort of agglomerating, and we had all the lights off in the room, and that was just, it was a recipe for disaster. I had just eaten a bunch of pizza.
Well, nobody can read the current periodic table up there. It's too small, anyway.
It's very, very small.
Try teaching chemistry in that room.
Right. Well, his idea was to paint a huge periodic table.
Is the one that's hanging up to date?
No. We're about to get four more elements in a few weeks
by
name. They already exist, but they're getting very cool names, including one named after a State of the Union. I'm sure that will be a trivia question in the future.
Delawareum?
It's going to be Tennessine will be the name of the element, named after the sport of tennis.
Which one? I'm just kidding.
No.
Which state?
Michiganium. Professor Dan Maggio is here.
So remind me how this works. The elemental number has to do with the number of
protons.
So, for example, there is an element out there with 150 protons. We just haven't discovered it yet.
That's a little ways down the pike, but yeah.
So these exist based on the number of protons?
Right. I'm sure Kendra could say more. She knows more about this sort of stuff. But from what I understand, there was a predicted island of stability of these super heavy elements, and these may be the only other elements ever generated by humans for the rest of
history. That
doesn't
stop us from making up special ones for exams, like Michiganium
and
Detroitium, which I have definitely used regularly. Right.
Detroitium, of course, has 313 protons.
My most recent exam, Mercium.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Very well done. We're happy to be graced by our guest panelist. Professor Ike McKinnon is back.
I'm happy to be back, and I love chemistry.
Oh,
don't understand it, but I love it.
That's great.
I really do. I mean, and what? Tell me about the twins theory at some point.
On to the show.
We all have our expertise around here, Ike, and I think that's why we were all looking at you when there was something legal that came up, even though it ended up being about the
ASPCA. Nothing to do with what we teach, yeah.
No, our degrees mean nothing here. I am the least educated out of everyone here.
Well, but you get the most questions right, Professor Dave Chow.
By how many degrees I have? I have only one.
But the life experience.
Professor Kendra Evans is here. There was something going on yesterday. I wasn't going to bring it up till this moment, but then I saw the stripes that you're wearing. So both Professor Conant and Professor Belanger were wearing the same blue and white striped, not exactly
that
the same, but
lot.
It happens a lot. And you
Is
guys
there a memo?
Were sitting next to each other. And then when I was at the union meeting and listening to everything, everything started melding together, and I started melting.
Michelle and I did that for the class we team teach the first Friday taught to. We both showed up in stripes and
What, do you go verticals? Or
I think female professors, we have a limited wardrobe. There's whatever you don't have to iron.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought there was a lamb coats before.
Me too. Don't worry about it. Absolutely. Absolutely
true.
That's
why we should have uniforms here at Great Mercy.
So I guess what I'm getting at, Kendra, is me, you, and Liz should get together and really
should do that.
Do something coordinated.
Yeah, it's like you guys don't even talk about it.
This is... To me, this is a real university. Shouldn't we be walking around like the Three Stooges wearing cap and gown all the time? I mean,
back
teaching
in the day,
class in cap and
flammable.
Gown.
Flammable. We're in front of open flames quite a bit.
Teaching
a little
lab.
Cumbersome. Yeah.
Teaching lab in that situation would be tough. But there'd be a lot of drama.
Flammable one. We'll get you to the asbestos one.
Right.
Better. Professor Heather Hill Vasquez is here.
Hello.
What do you think about teaching a cap and gown?
Seems very medieval to me.
It does, and that is
but
your
she didn't
expertise.
Say no. She didn't say no.
I actually have a question for you. Are those some of the copies from the archives?
Yes, the ones that you
I
gave
pulled?
Me. Yeah, we're going to try a few of them here
some
in a minute.
Some of them are handwritten.
Yes, they are. Most of them are handwritten,
I'm jumping ahead in the show.
It's exciting. You know who tried for a very long time to get as a Halloween tradition in our college everybody to teach in their cap and gown was Katie Snyder. She really wanted us to do that and have that be something that happened every year. And I'm like, if I got lab that day, I'm not flipping and flopping all around.
That is so interesting. I never would have thought she would propose that.
We should try to get it back
out
there.
She's really, you know, so simple to the point. She's not like, you know, one to wear flashy academic regalia.
Your associate dean is simple?
Simple?
But she does have a simple, you know, she doesn't overcomplicate things. Which is a good role. That is a good character trait.
For an associate dean.
For an associate dean.
Yes. Folks, this is a question. This is not a question. This is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. We got lots of prizes with the old block logo on them. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. So Professor Heather Hill Vasquez went into the deep, dark archives of the university and came across some pretty wonderful questions. We'll do bits and pieces of them all together, and I'll say the name and the city of the people who sent the stuff in. For instance, this one was addressed to Ask the Professor, radio station WJR, Detroit, Michigan. No zip code.
Wow.
2 January 1961, delivered by George Duncan of Dearborn, Michigan.
Wow.
Pretty incredible. While we Americans do not seem to be too adept at composing good music, well, that's interesting, we must be credited with good taste when we borrow tunes from other nations. The following is a
sampling?
List of well-known American songs borrowed from older European music. So we'll just do a couple of these here. The Star Spangled Banner, what song is that based on?
I just read this last week.
It's an old English drinking song.
An old English drinking song?
That is not the name of it, but it is.
That's not what I was just repeating it.
The Colin Kaepernick thing. Oops. I'm a Canadian. I can joke like that.
Oh, yeah, you can. The song from England was "To Anacreon in Heaven" was the name of the song.
I was just about to say that.
I could have had like 12 guesses and not gotten close.
Now, we got to be able to get this one for the hometown Michiganders. "Michigan, My Michigan," which is the anthem of our great state, is based on what tune?
The Spartan Fighting Song.
No, it isn't. No. But that's a great guess. It's a great guess.
England, my old England.
Maybe if you think a little bit about the meter of da 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 da. What is
London
that?
Town? Oh, London Town?
No.
One more time with the meter.
Is this a Christmas tune?
Yes, it is. Where's Professor Jim
Christmas
Tubbs?
Tree. Christmas tree.
Yeah, it's O'Tannenbaum. Is what it's based on.
Yes.
Michigan, my Michigan.
Very
blah,
good.
Blah, blah,
very
blah. Good.
See, if you'd have done that,
yeah.
We would have.
I'm still picturing Charlie Brown right about now when I hear that. So,
Christmas is coming.
How about "Hail, Hail, the Gang's All Here"? It's a classic song. It was taken from what? The tune was taken from
the U of M fight song.
No.
Hail, hail, the victors are here.
Close.
It would make sense.
Old Anxine. I don't know.
No, it's from the Pirates Chorus from the Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan.
See, Edwin. Oh, Edwin.
We could have used some people with some ancient song knowledge. How about these?
Them professors were smarter back then.
Bruce McInnis of White House, Ohio, on 26 November 1962, sent these questions in. Throughout history, certain terms have been used in sporting literature to denote groups of various species of game. Following is a list of animals. Give the traditional term for the group or cluster of each.
Murder
this is
crows.
Wonderful, by the way. Absolutely hilarious. You guys ready?
Dan,
if I manage to stump the professors, send me a subscription to The Atlantic. He used to ask the people to say what magazine they wanted as their prize.
Yeah, they used to do that. There's a whole set of invoices and people actually writing in to say, I didn't get my copy of The Atlantic.
Or Harper's, wasn't it?
Harper's was the other one, I think. Yeah, there's two or three, I think.
What is the traditional name for a group of quail?
A gathering?
It is not.
A dinner's
starts
worth.
With a C.
A cacophony.
A delicious stomachful. Yeah. No.
Okay. Did you say crowd?
Yeah.
I don't even know how I would give you a clue to this, but sometimes a small cave that's close to water is called a...
Crest? Craven?
A small cave.
Cravat.
Cravat.
I'm doing everything again. It's a covey. I was going for covey.
Covey. Maybe a cove. Yes.
How about a group of lions? I bet you know that one.
Pride.
Yes. A group of leopards.
More prideful?
A humility?
Spotty memory?
No.
No.
Fear.
That sounds about right. There's a group of leopards behind me. Oh dear. Fiddle-dee-dee, what will I do? It's a leap of leopards.
Leap of leopards.
A group of jackrabbits. Same name as the outer part of an ear of corn.
A husk.
A husk of jackrabbits.
No. A husk of jackrabbits.
Wow. Group of squirrels. I don't even. I can't even possibly.
Evil. Rats with tails.
Evil.
Possibly give you a clue to this one. It's a dray, a D-R-A-Y of squirrels. Wow.
Dr. Dre.
I have no idea.
Oh, what am I thinking?
Dr. D-R-A-Y.
Yeah.
I misquoted LL Cool J in lecture the other day, and the student called me on it.
Oh, yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah.
I felt so stupid.
Hey, when that happens.
A group of pheasants. How about the same as a group of flowers?
A bouquet.
Yes. Wow. A group of rhinoceroses.
A smash.
Really fearful.
A crash. A crash.
Boom.
Crash of rhinoceroses. Yeah.
How about a group of martins? That's actually really funny.
The dean.
The birds.
Yeah, a dean.
Okay. I may have been able to do the Dr. Dre as a clue here, but a group of martins, as in the birds, I'm assuming, is a richesse. Sure. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Sure.
I'm going to work that into my next lecture for sure.
That's French.
A group of turkeys. No, it's the same as the upper part of an A-framed roof house.
A peak.
A gable?
Inside
a gable
of the A-frame house. Mm. Not a gable, but a...
Dusty?
Starts with the letter R.
Rafter.
Dust bunny.
It's a rafter.
A rafter of turkeys.
Oh, my.
Why couldn't you just say, you know, what's in an attic? No, it has to be an A-frame.
No. What's in my attic? You don't want to get in.
What?
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Criticizing Matt for his clues.
Yes, I give bad clues. Dear sirs. Oh, my.
Oh. Sorry, ladies, you're out of this one.
Yes.
Pardon me. 12 of April.
I don't know anything anyway.
1962 from Lanningsburg, Michigan. My name is John Miller.
Hi, John.
And I'm in the fifth grade.
Wow.
I go to Doyle School in Lanningsburg, Michigan. I would like a subscription to Harper's.
I can't get over it.
That's what they used to do, apparently.
It would be funny. We should track him down and send him.
Sorry, we're a little late.
Well, but
so basically, he's about 55.
Do we have an address for him?
What's his name?
John Miller.
That'll be easy to find.
There's only one more common name in the entire world, and it's John Smith. So it's
I was going to Google him, too, and I'm like, I'm not Googling John Miller.
I'm not even trying on that.
Below are some questions about Michigan history. I'd like a 7 out of 10, and I'd like the professors to give the year date of each event.
Oh.
It's quite...
Very specific and excellent penmanship.
Yes,
excellent.
Yes. Wow. His mother wrote it probably.
No, back then people knew how
you did. You really did.
I'm leaning in a Kendra direction here because essentially we're looking for years and it's going to be tough. It looks to me like he's starting early and moving to more modern, but we'll see how it goes. In what year did Father Marquette pass away in Ludington?
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, no,
I'm going to say 1789.
It's way before 1789.
Usually somebody shoots high, somebody shoots low, and Kendra
nails it. Kendra nails it right
in the middle.
Right.
So quiet, 1712.
It's before 1712.
1687.
Yeah. Kendra?
What was that, Ike?
1632.
You're really, really close.
Kendra,
you push all those together. Kendra gets one shot. 1675.
Oh,
wow.
We're getting there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Okay, so in what year did Father Marquette and Claude Dablon found the first mission at Sault Ste. Marie?
I'm guessing it's before 1675. Just a
gamble.
You know
what we say in my class when students say things like that?
Probably
partial credit.
I was thinking you would say, duh.
What's that?
1589?
No, it was actually very close to 1675.
Yes, 1673.
1668. I'm giving it to you. Pontiac, Chief Pontiac, and Sir William Johnson met at Fort Ontario and reached an agreement in which Pontiac gave his allegiance to the British. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
What year?
What year?
Oh. Yeah.
Would have been close to the Revolutionary War, perhaps.
I believe it was right before.
1773?
How about 66? We'll give it to you. 1766.
Partial credit?
Partial credit. Oh, absolutely.
Any credit, we'll take it.
Absolutely. Let's see. This is a very interesting way to phrase this question. Jean Nicolet, an agent of the French, was the first, it says here, first white man to pass through the Straits of Mackinac.
Okay. Good for him.
In what year did this event take place?
This would have been before Marquette came in.
Let's say the first non-Native American to pass through the Straits of Mackinac.
1650?
It's actually earlier.
Wow, he had frequent flyer.
1632.
1634. Give it to the man. All right. Michigan is incorporated into what's called Upper Canada under the provisions of the Constitution Act by British Parliament.
1650?
No. This actually would be post-revolutionary.
Oh, and post...
1802.
Really close. 1791. Yeah. 1791. Oh, kind of. Haven't really got to that point yet.
You're very
generous. No, within John Miller 30 is, years.
He's a stickler.
The British did this?
I know.
The British did it, yes. And then Michigan it took about 30 more years. 1826 was when Michigan became a state. Yeah. So.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. City of Detroit is incorporated by the first bank that was started in that city. So I know that 1701 is what we say for City of Detroit, but when was the first bank started?
1705?
No, it was a number of years later.
1850?
I feel like giving it to you because 1701 is so long ago. 1806 was the first bank. So it took a while before people started putting their money down.
2 weeks after that. Yeah. Oh.
Wow. Jesse James showed up and robbed a bank and shot the money.
And the ATM on the street corner.
Let's see. Okay, so there's a lot of references in the questions you found, Heather, to the William Kelly Joyce Circle of Avid Admirers. Please enroll me as a member of the William Kelly Joyce Circle of Avid Admirers. Oh, I have enclosed my 10 cents, which the professors may use for charity or bribery. Sure.
I think he was a professor on the panel.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Journal of the Circle of Avid Admirers. My question concerned a number of subjects from astrology to zoology. I asked the professors to answer 6 out of the 8. So. If you fail, send me a subscription to Harper's. This is Hal Carroll of Mount Clemens, Michigan. Yeah. The Clem.
Do you know him?
You got to. You live there.
Right. Dated him in high school, right?
Totally. This is, this is interesting.
What year was that, 61?
It says this was 1962. God, 14 of March.
I'm the only person on this panel that's old enough to remember that. I used to listen to this show.
I think that may be true.
Yeah, seriously.
So you've already heard these questions.
Absolutely. I was wondering, who is this? You know,
you should be getting all these.
I was in the glint in the backseat of a rickshaw.
We have a subcategory. So number one is astrology. Under what sign was President Kennedy born?
Unlucky.
Well, that is definitely true.
Leo?
Not Leo.
When's his birthday?
That's a good question.
Libra.
One down, 11 to go. Aries. It's not Libra.
Sagittarius.
Cancer.
Gemini.
It is Gemini. Aries. It was
there
Gemini.
You go.
The twins. That's me, Gemini.
The twins. Who developed the system of classification of living things in which a human was designated as Homo sapiens?
Linnaeus.
Carolus Linnaeus.
Professor Biology.
Go across the table, back to Professor Evans. What is the molecular formula for octane?
C8H18.
Correct.
Wow.
That is correct. Very well done. Law. Oh, here we go, everybody. Look at Ike. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3 of the Federal Constitution states.
Oh, that's great.
May I have a lifeline to the law school?
Yes. Exactly. J. Edgar Hoover couldn't answer this question.
Where's Jeffrey Figer when we need him?
Oh, my gosh. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. What is a bill of attainder?
I can't help you there.
It's actually a well-known quantity by theory, but I don't think we call it attainder anymore.
Does that start with ATT? Is that how
ATTAINDER? Bill of Attainder.
Can you read it again, please?
Sure. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3 of the Federal Constitution states, no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. What is a bill of attainder?
An IOU?
No.
It's a good guess. It means we can never make a law that allows us to skip a fair trial in someone's sentencing. They have to be given a trial.
Wow.
And it's in the highest law of the land. What's the difference between an afferent neuron and an efferent neuron?
This is a math question or a chemical?
It's not our question.
Motor?
Sensory and motor, that fits
question.
The bill here. That's
there
pretty good.
Again.
Nice.
Okay. Afferent and efferent.
He said difference and I got nervous.
He asked a question, I got nervous.
This is listed as physics, so maybe we need Prasad, but maybe everybody can help out. What are the four states of matter?
Liquid.
Gas, liquid, solid.
Got it.
And hunger. Yes.
And hunger. Very well done.
Hunger.
Very
Michigan,
well done.
Ohio, Florida, yeah. Pennsylvania. Those are the states that matter.
That's right.
The four states that matter.
It's interesting from a 1962 perspective. Carbon's the only element which is known to be capable of forming living matter. There's one other element scientists think might be possible of forming living material. What is it?
Silicon.
Yeah, silicon.
Wow. Oh, okay.
They both make four bonds. That's good enough, apparently, for most people.
In the 60s?
In the 60s, it was great. Yeah. This is totally Actually, we are reading questions that would have aired before Star Trek was on TV. Otherwise, I would have brought that up as an example.
Think about it.
Yep.
Think long and hard.
All right. These were sent to Ask the Professor by Douglas Shelton, let's see, of Toledo, Ohio. Many thanks for the subscription to Harper's. There we go, see? Which I won in your program several months ago. I should have enjoyed it very much. Okay. I hope you did.
I should have enjoyed it very much.
I should have.
I sure have enjoyed it very much.
Enclosed is another set of questions. I would like a subscription to America.
Ah.
The Jesuit Journal.
Wow.
Answer 9 of 14. We only have a handful of these, so we'll see how it goes. Of the 50 states and the District of Columbia, which three have the highest per capita personal income in 1960?
New York?
No.
Connecticut?
No.
Vermont?
No.
Hawaii?
Rhode Island? Delaware?
Michigan?
Delaware was number one!
Delaware?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
By the way, that was the highest per capita personal income of 1960, $3,391 annually.
How much?
Wow.
$3,391.
That's what I spent on lunch last week.
The other two were the District of Columbia and Nevada, for whatever reason.
Gambling.
Wow.
Of the 50 states in D.C., which three had the lowest per capita in 1960?
Wyoming?
West Virginia?
Alaska?
Nope.
Mississippi?
Yes. Mississippi was number
one
at $1,100.
Dakota? Kentucky? The Dakotas?
Not Kentucky. We already heard that.
Yeah, you guys are really ripping on Kentucky.
Sorry.
Arkansas and South Carolina. Where
we would have gotten them sooner or later. I mean,
it's true.
Kansas
it's true.
And Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. What state's per capita personal income was closest to the national average? So which state after all of that was right smack dab in the
Ohio.
Middle?
Ohio.
Pennsylvania.
Kentucky.
I'd say Ohio was close.
Michigan.
Indiana.
Nope, it was Indiana. Yep. Indiana was $2,257 annual per capita income. Let's see. Okay. Which three states in the University of Columbia? Great. Which three states in the District of Columbia have the highest total personal income in 1959?
Combined?
So for the whole state, how much money was made by the people who lived there?
I would have to say California would
California
be
number
one.
California was
number
two.
New Texas?
New York.
New York was number one. Mm-hmm. And the great state of?
Michigan.
Florida.
The Illini.
Oh,
Illinois.
Yeah.
Interesting.
New York, LA,
three.
And Chicago.
Chicago.
Yep.
By the way, cited material, my source for these questions was Business Week, 24 December 1960. So thank you very much, Douglas
thank
Shelton.
You very much,
Toledo,
Douglas.
Ohio. Pretty cool stuff. Heather, those were super, super fun. You got to find some more.
Okay, I'll go back in.
Could you go find some more handwritten by fifth graders? That would be great.
With good penmanship.
Oh, yeah, they got to have good penmanship.
Got to have good penmanship.
I'm tripping over my words left and right here. Dear professors, hello from Redmond, Washington. I've been compiling new questions on all sorts of topics over the last few months. Whenever I get a few moments of free time, I will jot them down. I hope they'll prove challenging and fun. As in the past, I'm confident the professors can meet my demanding 90% passing criteria.
Nope, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
not
I don't think we're going to do it.
I mean, with enough clues.
I feel like adopting it within my own classroom to see how the students like that grading.
I feel like
group.
Adopting, too.
I think they would have complained about some of those long, wordy questions we had on our most recent show.
That's true. That's true.
You put words in a chemistry test and they think you're lying to them or something.
I did have a student, I've given out a problem set for this weekend, came to visit me and talk about number one today. And my question says, blah, 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 and be sure to explain your response in three-dimensional detail. So I thought that I would throw him a bone after I saw the rock-solid 8.5 by 11 piece of paper of paragraph that would not qualify as three-dimensional detail. You can't just sort of talk about the way things look. You actually have to draw something and show me.
If you were to fold that paper into like a little box, it would count?
Maybe like a Mad Magazine. You put it over the middle and it would give the correct response.
Yeah, fold in.
Yeah. They like to write. These questions are from our very good friend Beverly Hollis of Redmond, Washington, who sent us questions all the live long day. In what year was France's last use of the guillotine for a public execution?
1789?
No.
Much later.
1949.
It was later than that.
What?
Really?
1962.
You know what? I mean, close enough for government work. 1977. I was alive during that year. That's pretty messed up.
Well, they could probably do it now and get a pay-per-view. I mean,
yeah, probably.
And it's probably awful. Sell out.
A Netflix original.
Yes, that's true. You know
what I mean? Wouldn't be that original, though.
No, it would not. Yeah. It was quite old, actually.
What is it? I'm sorry.
A guillotine?
Yeah, I mean, no, but I mean, is there like some evidence that... No, what I'm trying to say is... I mean, they... Well, okay, bye.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I immediately went to airplane. Da-da-da-da-da, and he's in the hospital. In the hospital, what is it? A building with doctors and nurses, but that's not important right now. That's where I thought you were going. A guillotine, what is it? Well, the dinosaurs were around. They were around for a while, and then... What is the name of the main character / host on Fantasy Island? I'm trying to help you, Kendra. Mr. Rourke, yes.
And Tattoo. That's right.
What singer or songwriter had a 1977, I'm seeing a trend here, hit called Running on Empty?
Kenny Loggins.
It was the person who actually wrote the song. This person wrote a lot of songs for the Eagles, and they're very, very well known for
Glenn Frey.
Standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, there is a statue of this person. Jackson Brown wrote all those songs.
Jackson Brown.
Yep.
I knew the song.
Hugo Awards are given to the best of what literature category?
Sci-fi.
Science fiction. That is true. Who's the first U.S. president to appear on People magazine?
Ooh.
Reagan?
Mm-mm. It was before
People
Reagan.
Magazine. Cool. Truman.
Who is the only person who has never been elected president of the United States.
Gerald Ford.
But served as the president of the United States. Gerald Ford. The only president from the great state of Michigan. Yep. There are two types of Scotch whiskey. We call it Scotch. What are they?
Cheap and free.
Wait. You said cheap, right? Because my brain heard sheep.
Is it like malts or something like that?
Yeah. There's a single malt.
Single malt and...
And what's a single something else.
Single cell.
In old school nomenclature, we call ethanol grain alcohol versus the alcohol from all sorts of other things. So it's single malt or single grain. Scotch whiskey. Okay. What is the Tip O'Neill Award annually given for? Side note, it has nothing to do with a long-standing American politician.
Literature?
I believe that there are some arrows floating towards Professor Chow with this one. It's not literature.
Cartoons.
Oh, cool. You're not going to believe this.
Saved by the
bell. You know.
Political cartoons.
It is given annually to the best professional Canadian baseball player.
Whoa, Tip O'Neill.
Wow. Now I got to find out who Tip O'Neill is in Canada.
But now it's time.
Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in Brantford.
Oh, yeah,
that's true.
We got to go check it out. We got to say goodbye, though, Professor Roach.
Goodbye.
Professor Conan.
Goodbye.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed to the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Javon Holland, technically directed by Michael Jason, and technically our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.